Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to God's glory and that of his kingdom. We are in the midst, I think it's fair to say, of a challenge that sometimes it seems defies definition. And it is imperative, if we are to beat that challenge, let alone overcome it, that we understand its nature, those who are involved in it, and what can, as a practical matter, be done about it. I couldn't be more pleased to say we have with us a woman who has given a great deal of thought to the challenge that she's described as socialism, that is now upon our country, that is now manifesting itself in a variety of ways that some successfully connect the dots and understand in their broadest perspective, as she does. But most of us, I'm sorry to say, still do not, let alone understand how it is we can possibly contend with the threat, domestic as well as foreign, that arises from this toxic ideology. Our guest is Cheryl Chumley. She is a very accomplished journalist and editorial writer, now the online editor of the Washington Times, a paper for which I had a column for 25 years and have great affection for. Cheryl brings to this a wealth of expertise and insights, and now has further enriched our understanding of the subjects she covers day in and day out at the Washington Times with a series of books, including The Devil in D.C., Police State USA, and of particular relevance to our present topic, one she wrote last year entitled Socialists Don't Sleep, Christians Must Rise or America Will Fall. And very recently, this year, a brand new book also about socialism entitled Lockdown, The Socialist Plan to Take Away Your Freedom. Cheryl Chumley, I couldn't be more pleased to have the chance to visit with you at now some length on these books and your thoughts behind them, and most especially your recommendations about what we do about this threat from what you describe as socialism. Welcome back to Securing America.
It's great to be with you, Frank. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. So let's define terms. We'll get into a little of your background and a book, of course, but socialism. Is that a term that you use to make a distinction between other words that are used to describe the ideology the socialists embrace, communism, for example, or going back to the founder, Marxism? Or is there no distinction really to speak of?
Well, I use socialism, like you said, it kind of ropes in a lot of the far leftist ideologies that really the Democrats like to play definition games with. And so I use the term socialism because in America that has become the talked about threat, really. People aren't talking about communism yet. They're not really talking about fascism unless they're busy labeling pro-Trump supporters fascists. But by and large, socialism is the big threat to America because it comes in soft and subtly on the wings of the Democrat Party. And we're all supposed to pretend that it's not socialism, it's democracy or it's democratic socialism. And that right there is the biggest danger, because if we don't call it out what it is early on, pretty soon we will indeed have communism. The bigger threat, if you want to put a name on it, is collectivism.
That's very helpful, because indeed, it does seem to me, whether you describe it in the way that most people are thinking about the problem, if they think about it at all, is in fact of a piece with where it will ultimately go if they have their way. Before we get into a more detailed discussion of what this all means in our own country and how it manifests itself, Cheryl, tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to have such a deep, well, concern about, but also understanding of the phenomenon of this radical leftist agenda and socialism.
Well, I was raised atheist in Massachusetts to parents who were teachers and very far left Democrats. And they called me, and maybe you'll get this reference, maybe some of your watchers and listeners will get the reference, but I was the Alex Keaton of the family. And the reference is to a sitcom, Family Ties, where it was all liberals in the family except the one conservative Alex Keaton character. And so my parents called me out for that, and we had
the black sheep, I think, is another term for it, right?
The black sheep. And really, I didn't, form political theories or anything until, I don't know, in my 30s, to be honest. I loved Ayn Rand. When I was in high school, we were assigned The Fountainhead, and it just resonated with me. But still, when I was even in college, I wasn't political at all. I had very little awareness of politics. So it was a slow morphing that really began when I started to get into news and I realized the importance of history and putting things in context. And in America, that means an awareness of the Constitution and how that is pertinent and applicable to today's politics. So that's really when I started becoming very sensitive.
Well, all I can say is thank God you did. Even relatively late in life, you came to this, and you bring to it, I think, really a marvelous, not only gifted writing, obviously, but also a grasp of that history and its relevance to our time. And to that end, I'd like to explore with you in the context of a speech that has concentrated a lot of minds on what on earth is going on with the U.S. government at the moment, in the person of Joe Biden, but under his presidency, that seems to have a lot more to do with, well, socialism at the very minimum, if not the full-on Marxist program, as evidenced in this address that he gave recently at Independence Hall, of all places, in Philadelphia. Talk a little bit about the speech as you watched it with that journalist's eye and historical perspective. And then we'll talk about the strains that you see in it of the larger socialist manifesto, if I can use that expression, at work.
Well, you can't talk about that speech without first mentioning the imagery and, the blood red background, the Marines at parade rest, the attempt of CNN to gaslight the blood red background by turning it hot pink because of the outcry from American citizens. And so the imagery enough was shocking. But then as you listen to Joe Biden speak and his despicably divisive comments, first and foremost, they were disgusting for any president to make. I don't care if it would have been a Republican being that divisive or a Democrat. A president of the United States should not make remarks that divide and conquer and call out segments of society based on political beliefs. But second off, it just, historically speaking, have we ever seen a speech like this from an American president? It just shows how far we've come. And for this president to have the audacity to campaign on a promise of unity, of unifying the nation after the so-called deplorable Donald Trump drove us into the deep, deep mud, for him to promise on that and then give a speech like this, for shame on him.
Well, and in between, of course, in his inaugural address, he affirmed that commitment and professed that that was going to really be the leitmotif of his administration. Far from it. Cheryl Chumley is our guest. We're delighted to be able to say she's going to be with us for the full hour. We'll be right back with much more. The author of Lockdown, The Socialist Plan to Take Away Your Freedom. Right after this. Thank you. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The World Health Organization is preparing to spring on us not one but two different initiatives aimed at enormously expanding the power of that deeply problematic international agency. I just went through the motions of asking for public comments. Here are the gist of mine. Given the WHO's record of doing the Chinese Communist Party's bidding by insisting on ineffective masks, devastating lockdowns, inadequately tested and dangerous vaccines, and mandate-enforcing passports, it would be utterly insane to increase that agency's authority, specifically to tell us what is a public health crisis of international concern and how we must respond. A million of us have perished already. Must more needlessly die? The American people and their representatives in the U.S. Senate must oppose any such surrender of our national sovereignty and or further compromise of American public health. The WHO should not go there, and we certainly must not. This is Frank Gaffney. Welcome back, Cheryl Chumley, the online editor of the Washington Times and the author of a number of very important books, including a brand new one entitled Lockdown, The Socialist Plan to Take Away Your Freedom. Cheryl, you've very helpfully calibrated, I think, for us what Joe Biden was saying and the optics of his speech at Independence Hall. I'd like to just ask you to talk a little bit about what he's doing that moves this from the realm of just divisive and really reprehensible oratory to a very dangerous program, or as you put it, plan to take away our freedoms. He spoke directly of a threat to the state, enemies of the state, you know, extremists. And then used to define the people he was talking about, well, I think a majority of the country. It was specifically MAGA Republicans and Trump supporters, of course, but actually it's much larger universe of Christian nationalists and election deniers and anti-abortion activists and the like, or people who simply don't, you know, embrace the idea of abortion. Give us a flavor of what this means in terms of, we did an interesting webinar about this subject recently, the othering of perhaps over 100 million Americans.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And he mentioned MAGA Republicans specifically, but first off, let's look at what that stands for. It just stands for Make America Great Again. So when you're denigrating Americans who want to make America great again or keep America great, however you want to frame that, what does that even mean? It puts you on the side of decidedly anti-American, because the opposite would be make America awful or terrible. So I'm not even sure that he fully understands or grasps the seriousness of what he was saying. But you're quite right that it goes beyond just Trump voters. It goes to the heart and soul and the spirit of America, which is more traditional in value. People in America love families and love family units. And we're watching with horror as that is being torn down and torn apart by a far left radical agenda with Marxist roots, the LGBTQ agenda. And so when you look at what Joe Biden is doing beyond his rhetoric, I would just point to one thing. Wait for the 87,000 IRS agents to come after the lower income and middle class earners of America, because let's be serious, this is who these agents are going to target. And watch how American citizens are more frightened of their government than ever before. And that right there, that flipping of the role of citizens as the employers and politicians as the employees, and then the citizens becoming frightened of their employees, that's a flip in America that is going to be very difficult to return from.
Let me just say, I think we have to stipulate that it's not clear that Joe Biden understands what he said just because of his mental condition at the moment. But what matters is the presidency, the bully pulpit, as it's been called, of the presidency, has been employed to enunciate these horrifically threatening terms. And again, it's accompanied by actions that are also deeply threatening, and that, you know, from your study of Marxism and socialism, are redolent of the sorts of steps that are put into place to achieve the fundamental transformation, as Barack Obama calls it. And you alluded to the optics, the military personnel in sort of a threatening silhouette in the background of that speech at Independence Hall is kind of a symbolic message of the power ministries are now to be used against our people, at least a very substantial number of them. Talk about this in the arc of the socialist metamorphosis, if you would, Cheryl. Is this to be expected if that's the path we're on? And how ominous should we regard not just the IRS agents, but the FBI, the Justice Department, the intelligence community, the Defense Department, the Homeland Security Department, also being marshaled in various ways, seemingly for repressive purposes?
Well, it's extremely worrisome. And, you know, what I thought of when I saw Joe Biden standing against that blood red background with the two Marines in the back, I thought of that book, Animal Farm, by George Orwell. And there was a particular scene in that fictional account of animals uprising and taking over the farm from humans, where the pig in charge, I think his name was Napoleon, he had seized the newborn puppies from a pair of dogs who had given birth, a female dog who had given birth, and they disappeared from view, only to reemerge sometime later, militarized and standing behind him as he gave a speech to the Animal Farm audience. And for some reason, that's what popped into my mind when I was watching Joe Biden speak with the Marines as his backdrop.
Fascinating.
And it's
the line that would have occurred, of course, is some animals are more equal than others. I think it's out of Orwell too.
Absolutely.
And you know, interesting that you say that, because we also had a fascinating webinar Thursday of last week about. Was this attack on the family, separating children from their parents, turning children against their parents, turning parents against their children, for that
1984.
Matter? All of these are instruments of this kind of totalitarianism. And is it your view? Do you think it's an overreach? And I think, given your books, you obviously don't, but that's what's underway here. Whatever Joe Biden is thinking, the people writing what he's reading off that teleprompter, and who are therefore running the country, whose exact identity, incredibly, we don't know, are clearly, it seems to me, intent on putting us on that trajectory. Is that, in fact, your view as well?
Absolutely. And look, there would be two ways to take over America: by military, right, which at least is out in the open and you know who your enemy is. You grab your gun and you know who to fight. You know who to fire upon. But there's another way to take over America, and it's the sneaky, sly, devilish way. And this is what's taking place right now. It's selling things like socialism and communism and Marxism, which really, as we established, collectivism is the bigger enemy here. It's selling it as a good, and it's flipping good for evil in a way that American citizens don't even realize it and actually embrace. And if you look, for instance, at the public school systems, this is what is being fed into our children's minds: to hate America, blame America for all the world's ills, and to embrace principles and societies like socialism is something that is fairer than anything free market capitalism can bring. And so it's this soft sell of socialism that comes in like a sly devil in the night to change the mindsets of American citizens. And after that occurs, it changes the actions.
This is a really important insight, Cheryl, and a very important part of our program was a conversation presentation, videotape presentation by Sam Sorbo, who I assume you've encountered, a remarkable actress and filmmaker and author in her own right, of a book, including one called They're Your Kids, which talks about government schools and this practice of indoctrination that is taking place. We have to take another short break. When we come back, Cheryl, I want to get into this indoctrination, the content of it. You spoke earlier of the Marxist agenda and the LGBTQ pieces of it. The critical race theory piece, I think, is the one you're also referring to. And what this is all designed to do, especially in terms of fracturing families, to rewire our next generation from whom we are almost certainly going to get leadership and perhaps of a very, very dangerous kind indeed. That and more with Cheryl Chumley, the author of Lockdown, right after this.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. We're continuing this hour-long conversation with Cheryl Chumley, the author most recently of Lockdown, the Socialist Plan to Take Away Your Freedom. This is a really important book, couldn't be more timely. She is the online editor of the Washington Times. She follows these matters extremely closely and writes brilliantly about them in her columns there at the Times. But these books, including its predecessor, one entitled Socialists Don't Sleep, Christians Must Arise or America Will Fall, are informed by really close study of what we're up against. And we're visiting with her about various aspects of it. And we're going to get to shortly her recommendations about what we do about it. I did want to just say, Cheryl, you alluded in the last section to our segment to our possible clash with a military that is, enlisted to go after Americans. And I don't think you were advocating taking up arms. I just think you're noting that that's an option when you have a clear hostile force at work against you. I think what we're all interested in is here avoiding the mutation, the morphing, the destruction of our constitutional republic through peaceable means. And we're going to talk more about that in a moment. But before we do, just a little bit further drill down on this indoctrination of, unfortunately, not just our children, but government employees, our military, and of course, large swaths of the population, at least through the kind of messaging. Dr. Robert Malone gave us a short course in our recent webinar about this phenomenon that's being called mass formation psychosis. And could talk about that in the COVID context particularly. But how virulent is this critical race theory, for a shorthand way of describing it, and inimical to our republic if people do internalize and embrace its teachings as true?
Well, if critical race theory is the way that we are going to teach things like civics in this country, or the way that we're going to approach history, or pretty much any topic, because as I understand it, you can relate any topic, any course instruction back to critical race theory. But if it's all going to be filtered through a lens of race first, and then every other study pertinent to the course material second, then what you're going to have is a culture that is a society that is taught to look at everything first through the vein of race. And that counters 100% what America is about. We are supposed to be a melting pot, which we are united under God and to the Republic for liberty and justice and principles of freedom and so forth. We're not divided by race and then in those various divisions united for our various interests. We're Americans first. And so critical race theory causes a wedge in that. And it changes a way of looking at this country, which is very, coincidentally enough, very handy for the Democrat Party, which always flourishes when things can be divided and then much easier conquered.
Well, unfortunately, that's the case with socialism and communism and Marxism more generally. It's all about fracturing. In fact, I just want to run this by you, Cheryl. In the course of this webinar, we had two particularly powerful presentations, one by Xi Van Fleet, who hails from China, was a survivor of Mao's cultural revolution there. The other by Reggie Littlejohn, who you may know, who's been a very, very effective human rights advocate, and warning specifically about one of the facets of the Chinese Communist Party's misrule of their own people, which has been this sort of, she calls it womb police apparatus that has been instituted to nominally control the population growth, but actually it's more about controlling the society, the population of China that is with us. And this is the principal takeaway, is that there it may have been and is about class warfare, the struggle that is endlessly supposed to take place against, you know, the bourgeois in favor of the proletariat, the working people. And Xi Van Fleet said very directly, look, this is the cultural revolution here. It's using race, but that's always been part of the struggle too. But it just happens that there's more concerned with racism in the past, at least here, than class. And to the extent that all of that is the context, and that it is about dividing us and fracturing us and creating mechanisms that will more easily control us, this couldn't be more threatening to the America that we've known and loved and want to bequeath to our own children.
Well, it's definitely a huge threat, especially when you have most of the younger generations going through public school, where the Democratic Socialists of America, one of the largest organizations committed to advancing socialism in America, has actively recruited teachers and administrators and school officials to go into the schools and feed the propaganda from the socialist and Marxist side of things into the next coming generation. So critical race theory comes up at this crucial moment in time where it is being eagerly embraced by a large portion of those who are entrusted to teach our youngest minds of American principles in the first place. And so, yes, it's a huge peril.
Yeah. James O'Keefe's recent expose of a school up in Connecticut, as I recall, is a very powerful reminder of that. And I think here in, you know, Loudoun County, Virginia, and elsewhere, parents were given some insight into just how radical these teachers have become through the online learning that we were required to engage in, many of us at least, as a result of this lockdown. Which is, of course, the title of your new book, The Socialist Plan to Take Away Your Freedom. And I want to pivot to the COVID sort of response. The virus, we're persuaded, as you know, we've done a recent book about the CCP is at war with America, in which we talk about this virus being a product of a biological warfare program of China and being unleashed on us deliberately. But whatever its providence was and whatever the degree of complicity of the CCP in unleashing it, what they unmistakably did was they exploited it to the fullest by instituting and getting everybody else through the agency, among other things, of their World Health Organization allies to adopt the China model. And we're going to have to take a break here shortly, but just give us sort of the quick assessment of how the lockdowns that were part and parcel of that model have put us in such a dire strait now here at home.
Well, again, to further the theme we were just talking about, the changing of the minds of the younger generation, the entire coronavirus chaos and the government's use of fear to exploit its powers for over 2 years have resulted in a successful shift in mindsets of the American people from one of individualism to one of collectivism. And if you look at all the various things we were told to do for the good of others and put others' health first, even if we didn't believe in the science or data ourselves, and people in America did that. That shows to me how far
collectivism at work.
Collectivism at work.
Yeah, indeed. And I want to come back to this in the context of this mass formation psychosis, which talks all about this idea that it is the supremacy of the collective over the individual that has to operate. And it's so chilling. And again, Cheryl, I think your book, Lockdown, The Socialist Plan to Take Away Your Freedoms, is so vitally needed at a moment like this to help those of us who are seeing pieces of this connect the proverbial dots. We'll do more of that on the other side of this short break. Stay tuned for more with Cheryl Chumley right after this. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The World Health Organization is preparing to spring on us not one but two different initiatives aimed at enormously expanding the power of that deeply problematic international agency. It just went through the motions of asking for public comments. Here are the gist of mine. Given the WHO's record of doing the Chinese Communist Party's bidding by insisting on ineffective masks, devastating lockdowns, inadequately tested and dangerous vaccines, and mandate-enforcing passports, it would be utterly insane to increase that agency's authority, specifically to tell us what is a public health crisis of international concern and how we must respond. A million of us have perished already. Must more needlessly die? The American people and their representatives in the U.S. Senate must oppose any such surrender of our national sovereignty and or further compromise of American public health. The WHO should not go there, and we certainly must not. This is Frank Gaffney. Welcome back once more. We are continuing our conversation with Cheryl Chubley, a very accomplished journalist, as well as editorialist, as well as editor. Now, he's got the responsibility for online publication at the Washington Times. We're talking about her brand new book, Lockdown, The Socialist Plan to Take Away Your Freedom. And worse, we're talking really not so much about the plan in the abstract, but the plan as it is being executed before our very eyes. Cheryl, you talked a little bit about COVID, this idea that people would sacrifice their own freedoms in ways that were quite material. In the course of this lockdown, among other things, of course, their freedom of movement, their freedom of assembly in churches, notably, and I want to come back to that, the freedom of speech, as well as, of course, you know, the masks and subjecting themselves, in many cases, with real trepidation, and rightly so, to these inadequately tested vaccines. And then being told that they had to have them if they're to be employed, or at the very least, they had to be monitored with vaccine passports to ensure they were complying. All of this, to some extent, was justified because the collective, the larger society, other people might be adversely affected were you to do otherwise. How central would you say that has proven to be to this socialist plan's advance just in the past 2 years?
It's the second most important accomplishment for the far left globalists. The number one accomplishment will be to remove God totally from society, but changing the mindset of the American people to think more of the collective and not at all of individual rights, which of course in this country come from God, is crucial to advancing this globalist vision, the Great Reset, Joe Biden calls it Build Back Better. Previous elitists have called it One World Order, New World Order. But once you can change people's thinking so that they are more concerned about doing in their own lives what makes other people feel good, and it's not coming from a position of Christian love of humanity, but rather from a position of government regulation and control, then you have successfully corralled the people into a corner where you can lead them like sheep wherever you want to take them.
Yes. I so appreciate the emphasis that you're placing on the assault on Christianity. Another of our lines of work is a project we call Save the Persecuted Christians. And we have been really frantically watching as a phenomenon that is now afflicting, by some accounts, 360 million Christians around the world, namely heavy persecution, is coming as they say, to a theater near you, coming to your church, coming to your republic. And I just would ask you, Cheryl, when you say that the single most important accomplishment to come out of this COVID business and the socialist plan more generally is to further diminish or extirpate altogether, maybe, our Christian faith, notably by preventing us from going to church for a period of time. That is such a frontal assault, really, on the character of our country. I mean, they've gone long ways already in suggesting that this isn't a Christian nation or Judeo-Christian nation, if you will, from its inception. But talk a little bit more about the progress that has been made within the church by these Marxists, as well as enacting upon it to the detriment of believers and to our country.
Well, first and foremost, it's everything. The faith in America is everything. Keeping God at the top and government in a role of subservience is everything. That is, if you ask someone what is the exceptional aspect about America, it's this: God-given rights. It's that our rights come from a creator and government's only there to preserve and protect those rights. And that's everything, because, you know, we don't need government to tell us how to behave. But that's not just a phrase to bandy about or slap on a bumper sticker. It's a blessing, but it also carries a responsibility. And it means that we in America have to fight to keep God on the public stage, in the public corridors, and so forth. And so the attacks on churches in America under the coronavirus and the government mandates closing churches, not by any act of law or legislation, but just by order of a government bureaucrat, that was significant because it shows how far we've come down the path of caring about the faith-based in America, in the church community. And at the same time, this has been happening, churches closing based on government order. We've had a large portion of churches turning away from the harsher biblical principles, the ones that tell you the truth of sin and the need to repent, which is crucial in keeping virtues like humility and belief in above, not belief in the secular, alive and well in America, which again goes to the importance of keeping the Constitution intact. So the church is being attacked from within by soft selling salesmen masquerading as preachers, and it's being attacked from without by government bureaucrats who don't want the church and the church community getting in the way of their big government designs any longer.
That was brilliantly put, and I couldn't agree more with the sentiment and the facts that you're putting forward. I would commend in this regard, if I may, in addition to your book Lockdown and the previous one, entitled Socialists Don't Sleep, Cheryl, is that our colleague Trevor Loudon has done a film talking about this penetration and subversion of the church from within, entitled The Enemies Within the Church. Required viewing, and I commend it to all of our listeners. Cheryl, we have to take another break, very brief one. We'll be right back with more about what do we do about all of these dangers to our freedoms, to our society, to our families, and to our futures, right after this. We'll be right back. Welcome back to our final installment of this conversation with Cheryl Chumley, the online editor of the Washington Times and the author of a brand new and terrific book, Lockdown, The Socialist Plan to Take Away Your Freedom. We are talking, Cheryl, about so many different threats here. Let's get to the what do we do to protect and preserve, for that matter, the country we love. One of the things that is obvious and necessary, I think, is to take advantage of the opportunity for a course correction in elections this fall. It will not be a presidential election. It will not change the presidency, though there may be changes in that in due course, but it can change the trajectory that you've described, if the right sorts of people are elected and they're elected with a commitment to the public to make such a course correction. Can you talk a bit about both the importance of that as a corrective and the threats that you may perceive to it being available to us, given everything else we've talked about on the part of these Marxists and socialists and Joe Biden?
Right, because we did just go through the last election where the Democrats successfully sold the fear-filled idea that we have to stay home and vote or mail in our ballots, which of course opens the doors to either real or perceived questions of fraud. And so as we enter this next election season, I fully expect the Democrats to try that again with some other virus or some other subvariant. Thankfully, some Republican states have tightened voting laws, so they may not see success that way. But to answer your question about the importance of voting, the importance of changing the trajectory through the political realm. Yeah, I have been advocating for a very long time that Christians need to get up off the couch and stop pretending as if, yes, they live in this world, but not of this world. But that doesn't mean that you just deny the existence of the world and just cede the platform to Satan, because that's exactly what's happening. And I know a lot of Christians out there at the very least have children that they care about the fate of America for. So for that very reason, more Christians in America need to vote and vote with their Christian beliefs. Don't be afraid to bring biblical values into the ballot boxes, because this country was founded on those same biblical values. And it's the far left that is skewing that truth and radicalizing America with the atheist secular way of thinking, and not those who believe still in Judeo-Christian values and principles. So yeah, Voting is crucial.
Well, all the more so because, as I think we discussed earlier, among the categories of people Joe Biden vilified and caricatured as dangerous, to say nothing of enemies of the state, were these Christian nationalists that he is suggesting are somehow a threat because of their attachment to our country and their recognition that one of the most cherished, indeed the first freedom in our Bill of Rights, is the freedom to practice our faith, a faith imbued by traditions and the seminal belief of our founders in the Judeo-Christian God and practice. And so, Cheryl, I think your emphasis on this is vital, and I hope that people, despite what's been happening in the church, both from within and without, as you say, will be heeded. Because as I understand it, and I'm sure you've got fingers at your fingertips, better numbers than mine, but there are millions of Christians who have, in fact, stayed on the couch in previous elections. And maybe just a final word in conclusion of this larger point about the plan we're up against and the necessity for action to resist it, of that not being the case this time around, and most especially not permitting our elections to be somehow prevented, precluded, rescheduled, postponed, or otherwise denied us.
Well, I mean, if Christians, those with constitutional belief, limited government ideas, ideals, Judeo-Christian way of thinking, want to get involved in politics more, I believe that running for offices would take away, would make moot some of those problems that you just outlined, because the more good people we have serving in office, the less the evil can tend take root and spread. And this is really a void that we have created in our political offices with too few virtuous, morally compass people running for these seats, especially at the local level where you have tremendous control over ballot counting. Think of it that way, not to mention the school boards.
Mm-hmm. Amen. And it's late, obviously, for people to throw their hat in the ring for this election cycle, again, assuming it doesn't get postponed. But it is not too late, I think, for people to become involved in trying to assure that the polling that takes place is done in a free and fair manner. And you made the point earlier, Cheryl, it's so important that we've seen this play before. This does not work out if there aren't eyes on, if there aren't people with integrity and yes, biblical values engaged in trying to make sure that if mischief does take place, that it is detected and called out and prevented. So all of that is really vital. Cheryl, how can people follow the work you do best, both by getting your book and, of course, by following you at the Washington Times?
Thank you. Well, you can find me at washingtontimes.com, and you can subscribe to my Bold and Blunt podcast there. And you can also find links to my books and my work at CherylChumley.com.
And that's C-H-E-R-Y-L.
Yes.
Chumley, C-H-U-M-L-E-Y.
Thank you.
Bless you for this work. Cheryl, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the chance to have a longer visit with you than the usually all too short ones we've done in recent past, but it's a blessing. And I think the fact that you have made so central to your analysis, as well as your recommendations, the faithful service to God as well as country is something that's an extraordinarily needed message. So bless you for that, among other things. Come back to us soon with more on all of these issues. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, stay well. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow for more at Securing America. And then until then, you will go forth and multiply.